welcome everyone. Dustin Reichman here. In today's interview, I have the great honor of speaking with Tom Terwilliger. Tom is an achievement coach, and he has a very unique background and very inspiring story that he'll share right here at the top of the interview. Tom is actually a former Mr. America bodybuilder, and he's went on to help a lot of people get their mindset right, you know, find their self-confidence, find the will to achieve great things. And he's also the author of a great book called Seven Rules of Achievement. And we'll talk a lot about those seven rules in today's interview. You don't want to miss this one. It's full of energy and full of great information. So let's jump right in. Welcome, everyone. I'm very excited today to welcome Tom Terwilliger to our program. As I mentioned in the introduction, Tom's the author of The Seven Rules of Achievement. He's also the president of Coaching Leadership Excellence, and he's a former Mr. America bodybuilder. So Tom's going to have a lot of insights into mindset, both in success in all of aspects of our lives, but especially in our fitness. So with that, Tom, I'd just like to let you introduce yourself for those who don't know you and give a little bit about your unique background and what got you to where you are today.
Well, I appreciate it. First, let me say, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to put together this project and to serve people in the way you're doing, because I know, having done something similar in the past, that it's no easy task to get together a group of people, at the very minimum 12, you know, leading authorities in any given subject, and get them together to spend their time and to really serve your listeners and viewers. So I really got to commend you and reward you for taking that action and making it happen, putting it together, you might say.
Well, thank you very much.
And I'm honored to be part of it, so I want to let you know I really, really thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Excellent.
And yeah, you're right about one thing, for sure. I've got a somewhat unique background, but I think everyone does in many respects. Everyone's got their own unique experience. You might say story, right? Everyone's got a story. You know, I think there was an old TV show, you know, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was about Los Angeles and the Naked City, where there's a million people, a million stories. Everybody's got their unique experience in life. For me, it goes back way early on as a child growing up as an identical twin, experiencing some learning disabilities back in those days that were really challenging for us, my twin brother and I. And as a result, you know, we started to, you might say, express ourselves in ways that weren't the most productive.
Okay.
You know, first it was the class clown, then it was the class fighter. You know, I mean, we were always, always fighting. And it really, it was a sort of a detrimental period of time, because I developed some really limiting, disempowering beliefs around who I was and what I deserved in life as a result. And again, I know this component for a lot of people is something that they experienced as well. I used to think I was the only one who had dyslexia, hyperactivity, what they would probably or have defined today as attention deficit disorder.
Sure.
And you know, as a kid, you think you're the only one who's got this stuff, and it makes you weird, you know? And so I grew up kind of thinking I was weird and certainly different by all means. And the most disempowering was stupid. I believed I was stupid because I really had a tough time reading with the dyslexia. And if you can't read and you can't keep up with the rest of the class, and, you know, I mean, it starts to accumulate. And that was the disempowering belief. So by the time I was in 10th grade in high school, again, I was already a little bit different. I had my group of friends and peers. And we were kind of the tough guys. And we were already into drugs and alcohol, even at that age. Mm-hmm. I got my first motorcycle, my first Harley Davidson. It was a 1954 Panhead. I converted it into a chopper, and I started riding a chopper Harley Davidson in 10th grade. Who does that?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And there was nobody. The hard part was there was nobody to ride with. So and there's only one better sound than a Harley Davidson, and that's many Harley Davidsons side by side. So I saw that my job was then to seek out, to find guys to ride with that I could hang out with, because I had this image in my mind, this sort of Marlon Brando image in my mind, that this was cool, this was power, this was strength. A group of guys riding motorcycles, it was also a way of bonding and connecting and creating a brotherhood, which I also loved. So I went to whatever bars I would drive by that had motorcycles parked out front. And you know, even today, not so bad today, but I got to tell you, in the late 70s, early 80s, you drove by a bar that Harley Davidson's parked out front of it, it really probably wasn't the most wholesome environment. You know? And as a result, I started riding with guys that were, you know, great guys, certainly. But I picked up with a group of outlaw bikers in Long Island and New York and started riding with them. And for the next 5 years, that was my lifestyle, riding with and as an outlaw biker. And until one day, I kind of made a decision. And I won't get into the full story. The story is in the Seven Rules of Achievement. If you'd like to pick up a copy of the book,
sure.
I think you'll enjoy the story and the rules. And some of the things we'll talk about today are embedded in there as well. But I made an empowering decision. It was a tough one. But the decision was to leave that lifestyle. And it happened as a result of sort of a traumatic experience. But the key was the decision. So with that decision, I mean, everything changed, I got to tell you. And, you know, a lot of us face those moments in our lives, those experiences where we know we're involved in something or living a lie or we're not being our authentic selves in many respects.
Yep.
We put on a false face and this is who we become or we think we are in many respects. And sometimes with just a decision, a really empowering decision that's it, enough. And if you follow through on that decision, and you make and you follow through with congruent action, everything can change. And for me, it changed. The big question was, how is it going to change? I didn't know. It's sort of like a leap of faith. You know that what you're leaving behind is like, I can't take that anymore. I will not allow that in my life anymore. It's destroying my life, my relationship, whatever it might be.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to take this giant leap away from something. But we don't always know exactly what we're leaping towards. So what will happen is you just land and it just sort of... It opens up all sorts of opportunities. For me, it was getting back in the gym because it was in high school and early on I was training and I actually competed in a couple of bodybuilding contests and did pretty well. So I got back in the gym, started rebuilding the body that I've been destroying for the last 5 years.
Okay.
Along with it, I started rebuilding my self-esteem, my sense of self-worth as well.
Sure.
So those things were also really important factors in the gym. And we'll talk about strength of will a little bit later on, but a big part of that strength of will happens in the gym when you push yourself, when you go beyond what's comfortable. Anytime you go beyond what's comfortable, you strengthen your internal ability to move forward with other decisions. So the bodybuilding career started to take off, and I wound up competing in several competitions and ultimately competing in the Mr. America and winning that title and competing in several Mr. Olympias and sort of created a whole new life, a whole new experience that was much more authentic with who I really was versus the other lifestyle that somehow I allowed myself to get wrapped up in.
That's excellent. That's quite a story, and I think I'm sure the specifics will vary for a lot of people. The outlaw biker gang probably doesn't enter a lot of our lives, but I think the general story there of having to make a tough decision, having that be sort of a turning point in your life and make a leap, I think that's definitely easy to relate to for a lot of us.
Absolutely, yeah. We all have those experiences where there's something, maybe we made a wrong decision, and now we're sort of stuck, we're trapped, we're caught up in it. And for a lot of people, it's jobs and careers.
Sure.
For some, it is relationships. For others, it's different things. And it's tough. It's never easy. And sometimes, my experience is one of the things that I teach is that, this is something that's true for your body, as well as your mind and your spirit. As you move forward with anything, your unconscious mind, either physically or emotionally or spiritually, is going to whisper at you, you need to make some changes. It gives you subtle hints that this isn't right, you're not living your authentic self, it's time for a change, but we don't listen. Either we don't want to listen or we get really busy. I mean, God, there's so much stuff going on, right?
Yeah,
my
no kids
are running around. I mean, it's like, we get caught up in stuff, so we don't listen to the whisper. Then we get a shout, you might say. And a shout sometimes is a warning. Physically, for some people, that might be, let's say, blood pressure, or all of a sudden their back is out, or they develop arthritic cancer, whatever it might be, that is a shout, and then the slap in the face. If we don't listen to the shout, and for me, when I was living that lifestyle, I heard the whisper several times, and then it became a shout, but I had to make a decision. Had I not made that decision, I had not taken that leap of faith, and this goes for everyone who's in that position right now, if you don't take that leap of faith, you will ultimately get slapped. It's the whisper, the shout, and the slap in the face. Don't wait to get slapped. Make the decision, move on, start taking congruent action, and you will be amazed at what happens in terms of your inner strength. The ability to make more decisions like that and really empower your life is extraordinary.
That makes a lot of sense. And as you alluded to, we've got a wide variety of experts, and you're talking about a lot of different aspects with fitness. I think a lot of people expect to hear the abs expert and the nutritionist. Personally, I think this is one of our most important interviews to have an achievement coach.
Thank you.
Because I think that's where most people actually struggle. It's not so much in the knowledge, it's in doing it.
Oh, yeah.
So, would you agree that this focus on mindset is really key for anyone out there who wants to achieve any kind of health and fitness goals?
Well, it's really interesting. A friend of mine invited me to come speak at his transformation event last year. And it was a big event. It was probably over 500 people there. And some of the leading experts in the area of creating great abs and leaning out and getting ripped and getting cut and really getting in great shape. And all of them had extraordinary tools without question. One of the questions that was posed to the audience, and it was interesting, I didn't pose this question, but was, what do you think is, you know, the most important factor in really getting in shape and creating this lifestyle, this transformation, because the event was called the Transformation, Dominic. Sure. This transformation that you want in your life, what's the most important thing? Is it the nutrition? Probably 25% of the hands went up. Is it the exercise? Another 25% of the hands went up. How about mindset? Boom! Overwhelmingly, it was like, they knew. This is what I'm up against. Most people who even set goals will struggle along the way unless they've got the mindset right to be able to move towards that goal or objective. And it really doesn't matter what the exercises are, what the program looks like in that respect. If you don't have the right mindset, after a while, what happens is the old patterns start to come back into play. I call them the default patterns or default modes. And if the mind is a little bit confused about, wait a minute, am I this guy with great abs? Am I this couple that is fit and go walking together and mountain climb together and bike together and I just have this really healthy, you know, physical and fitness relationship?
Yep.
Or are we this couple that sits back and watches TV and eat chips every weekend? And you make a decision that, hey, we're this couple. We're this healthy couple. This is what I'm going to do, either individually or as a couple. And they make a decision. And they start moving towards it. But the mind is a little bit confused. It's like, well, wait a minute. Am I this or am I this?
Yeah.
And what will happen normally is it will revert back to what it believes really on the deepest core level it is, which for most people, they've gotten into the habit of sitting back, watching TV, eating chips, and whatever they might be doing on the weekends. So that becomes the default mode. So unless we're really clear and create the mindset needed to make that shift, that dramatic shift, after a while, it starts to gravitate right back to the old default mode. So yeah, the mindset component is critical, no question.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And you know, there's kind of three components here, and I know, you know, reading you know, some of the materials that you've shared, you talk about strengthening your mind, your body, and your will. I think most people, obviously, you know how to strengthen your body through exercise and fitness. I think most people understand, you know, your mind maybe through education, you know, that sort of aspect. But how do you strengthen your will, and what does that really mean?
Well, I tell you, those first two components, the body and the mind, both obviously contribute to that component, the will.
Okay.
What is the will? The strength of our will. Willpower could be defined as willpower.
Okay.
I mean, let's face it, if you have will weakness, what does that mean? That means when you're faced with those critical decisions based on something you decided, this is it. I'm losing 10 pounds in the next month. I'm losing 50 pounds over the next 6 months. I've made that decision. I'm moving towards it. I start my exercise program. But if we have will weakness, when the opportunity to have those chips or some dip, like, hey, you know, we're facing the holidays and it's like, it's pretty tough for a lot of people during those holidays to really say no, because most people don't have the willpower to do that. Now, ultimately, someone who's really created that shift we talked about and created that new neural pathway, that new default mode, which is, hey, you know what? I'm fit. I'm healthy. I have this great relationship. We both exercise and love it and enjoy it. And we eat healthy most of the time. We've created a new default mode. So it doesn't take a tremendous amount of will any longer to maintain that new default mode.
Okay.
But if you're still in this default mode and you've made a decision to be here, if you're not strengthening your will or you don't have strong willpower to do the congruent actions needed to create this new state, this new belief, it doesn't happen. It won't take hold. So a couple of ways that you can strengthen your will to succeed, you might say, is certainly, for me, has always been the gym. When we get into the gym, for example, and we, you know, just getting to the gym is an exercise in will. Because let's face it, especially as, you know, parents and husbands and wives, it's really easy to get distracted and get pulled off course. You know, I hear people, you know, it's like, well, how come you didn't get to the gym? Oh, you know, I would have had to put all my gym clothes in the bag and my sneakers. I didn't have clean socks. And I had to get in the car. I had to turn the key in the car, go down the block, make the left-hand turn, half a mile up the road. Then I had to pull in the parking lot. It's always tough to find a parking space. You know, and then I got to get into the gym, change my clothes, work out. It's like, oh, my God, it's just too much.
Yeah.
You can compound anything and make it seem daunting if you want. Or you can break it down to bigger chunks to say, you know what? This is part of who I am. getting in the car, putting the clothes in the car, that's no big deal. That's just not a big deal.
Yep.
So you strengthen the will just by going to the gym, certainly. But one of the really acute opportunities to strengthen your willpower, your ability to move forward, is every time you hear yourself say no, you've got to say, hey, thank you for sharing. That's that little inner voice. We all have this little inner voice that will direct us towards the default mode.
Okay.
Who we were, who we began to believe we were, right? This old potato chip eating person on the couch. The inner mind, the part of the ego, wants us to stay there. It's comfortable. You don't need this crap. What are you doing? So we'll find ways. It will make you acutely aware that, oh, my God, I got to pack my clothes in the bag, get in the car, start the car, I got to drive down the street. It's creating. That's your little inner voice that wants you to stay right here. So strengthening the will is getting the car and going. But also in the gym, when you're going through those exercises, your body's going to want to stop. At some point, it's going to say, that's enough. And on a scale from 1 to 10, that's enough may only represent a 3 or a 4 for you.
Sure. Yep.
You're capable of an 8, 9, or a 10. Even, I don't care what kind of shape you're in. It's all relative. Your 1 to 10 is relative to where you are right now. And your 3 is not all you can do. But it's all our body wants to do at that moment. We strengthen the will by pushing it to a 4, 5, 6, and 8. We strengthen the will every time we say no to the default mode and push past the pain barrier. Because there's a pain barrier in the gym. There's a pain barrier in our lives in every different area, all different areas, right?
Yep.
One of my favorite fitness pros, Todd Durkin. Do you know Todd Durkin?
Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
Todd's terrific. And he's really, you know, captured the ability to push people past the pain barrier. Another one is Juan Carlos Santana, who I love to quote. Juan gave me this quote today. You know, it is so perfect for pushing past, is that when we get into the gym or any area of our life that we're challenged, and we're facing that wall, you know, I mean, like a marathoner. It's the classic is the marathoner.
Absolutely.
You hit the wall, right?
Yep.
Well, for most of us who have not really trained our will yet, that wall is nothing more than a curtain with bricks painted on it.
Okay.
So face it. We think it's real. We think it's real. And the only way we're going to discover that it's not real is by going up, pushing ourselves far enough to get to the wall and touch it. And as soon as we touch it, it parts a little bit. And then we see that, holy crap, there's more on the other side. I can do more. I can push past that curtain, which is the illusion of a wall. And when we do that, every time we do that, even small little accumulative component strengthens our will. It strengthens this new belief that I can versus I can't. Because there's an old saying, whether you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right.
Yep.
So the only way to really get past that I can is to continually push forward, question it, and do whatever the congruent activities are to get past that wall, touch the curtain, and discover that you've got more way beyond. That's how we strengthen the will on a daily basis.
That's a great analogy. I love that.
Well, you can thank Mr. Juan Carlos Santana, my good friend, for that.
Okay. I will do that. You mentioned several times, and it makes a lot of sense to me, that, you know, we want to revert back to our default mode. We have a default mode, and our body's just not comfortable, or our mind, anything. It's not comfortable getting away from that. It's much more comfortable just to be the same old person that you believe that you are deep down. And this is probably a loaded question, and it probably is maybe a whole interview in itself, but I guess the question is, how do you change your default mode? So, you know, you feel like you're still the lazy guy on the couch eating chips, and so I can see any little crack in your willpower, you revert back to that. You want to be the fit and active, you know, husband and father who looks great, feels good, makes that a part of his life. How do you make that shift, or I guess it's the shift in mindset to where you have a new default mode?
Hey, that's a great question, and it is a little bit loaded because, when that, you know, you talk about loaded, we'll talk about like cocking a shotgun, pointing it at yourself and saying, okay, you're going to do this. That's how loaded it is.
Okay.
Because it is tough, and when that shotgun goes off, it's like it may not really be. It's that classic, be careful what you wish for.
Okay.
So in our minds, we're always careful what we wish for because it may represent some change. And change, more than public speaking or even death for most people, is what we fear most.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to change. We're comfortable right where we are, especially as Americans. And I know that you're going to reach a lot more than people that live in the continental U.S.
Sure.
But particularly in America, one of our the greatest desires in life, the American dream isn't, you know, we define it as having the home and the job and the family. The American dream is comfort.
Yeah.
More than anything else. It's a desire to be comfortable. I want a nice couch. I want a big screen TV. I want a car that's not going to break down. I want to know that I've got enough financial security to make sure I can get through retirement without running out of money before I run out of time.
Sure.
I want to be comfortable. You know, so in many respects, changing that mindset to create, and that's a, I want to even call that a, that's a survival or even a scarcity type mindset.
Yeah.
Shifting to an abundance mindset, it does, it is a loaded shotgun. It does take quite an effort. But the effort is simply this. It's identifying what you want. You can identify certainly what you don't want, what you're dissatisfied with. And many times, the dissatisfaction, the what we don't want, what we identify as the pain in our life, as Tony Robbins would say, this is the pain component. When we identify that and we decide, enough. I'm not going to allow that anymore. I'm not going to take it anymore. And we use that as the impetus. The pain and the fear can be a great place to start a journey, but it's not where you want to end it either, because there's no joy, there's no abundance there. So as I use this to springboard towards what I want, it's important that along the way, or even at the very beginning, I identify specifically what I want.
Okay.
What does that look like? And really painting a picture in your mind, you know, I mean, not just visually, but what does it sound like? What does it feel like to be that person? To be that person that makes the decision, you know what? At 6 o'clock, I've had my dinner. I sat, I watched a half hour TV, or I did a little bit of reading. Bam, I get up every night, I go for a nice power walk. That's the, maybe that's what, so what does that feel like? What does that look like? What would it be like to really be that person? And what are the beliefs that that person has that are maybe counter to what I have as the person who prefers to sit on the couch and continue to eat chips?
Yeah.
So what are the beliefs? What does that feel like, look like, sound like? And once we make that decision, we use the impetus of fear or pain to move forward. Once we make the decision of what we want, then the critical thing is to, at the minimum, and this has been scientifically studied for, you know, decades, is that a minimum of 21 days, I like to say 30 days.
Okay.
So let's just say for 30 days, you decide, you make some congruent actions along the way, and that's getting up at 6 o'clock, going out for a power walk, going to the gym 3 times a week, cleaning out the cupboards, getting rid of the junk food, and putting in what you know will serve you energetically. And physically, from a longevity standpoint, and you continue those habits, because somewhere along the way, and usually about 14 days, about halfway through, remember that little inner voice?
Yeah.
It's going to be like, hey, I call it the dragon. And the dragon starts to hop and pop and say, oh, you don't need this. Come on back. You know what I mean? They'll find some way to pull you right back. Yeah. It's like, wait a second. I was doing great, and then I went to the office party, and they had all these chips and these crap and this candy, and I went right back. The danger is, and this is what they've discovered through this new habit forming strategy of 21 days or 30 days, is that it's accumulative. So if you are creating a new habit, let's just say one behavior, getting up off the couch, going for a power walk every single night, if that is interrupted even one night, you start back from zero.
Oh, okay.
This is why most people never really create new habits, because they get interrupted. And we like to say as fitness professionals, it's okay, you fell off the wagon, no big deal. You get right back on the diet. But as we also know, the reality is most people really struggle with that. Once they step off the wagon and they choose not to stay on their diet or not to exercise on a daily basis, bam, it's tougher to get back into it.
Yeah.
Much tougher. And this is the reason why. 30 days, you're 14 days in, you fall off the wagon, bam, you go back to zero in terms of creating that new neural pathway of what you want, the new default mode. So it's really critical that we just say, you know what, for that 30 days, I am not, period, shifting this new behavior. It's going to get ingrained over that period of time. And you're going to change the little inner voice. All of a sudden, the little inner voice that's trying to pull you back to the old default mode will start to get a little discouraged. That neural pathway will get a little weaker. Its will get weaker, while your will gets stronger. And suddenly there's a shift in belief, shift in behavior, and before you know it, you're starting to become the person you really want to become in regards to fitness and health and whatever else it is that you want in your life. So that's one of the ways that we do that. What's one of the ways we make that leap of faith from this to this? Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. And if anyone gets a takeaway from this interview, I mean, to me, that's it right there. You can't go wrong with that advice, because I've heard that before, the 21 days, 30 days to form a new habit. What I've never heard clarified in the way that you just did was really how strict you need to be with that for that period of time, because that's what you need to, you know, to develop those new ways of thinking, those new, right. I guess, physically new neural pathways, and that if you do fall off, you really need to start back at zero and do it for 30 days again. That makes a lot of sense. And I can, you know, I've had these flashes going through my mind as you're talking of different things in my life where that makes a lot of sense, that 3 or 4 weeks.
We've all done that.
It becomes part of your lifestyle.
And then after the 30 days, it starts to happen. Well, you still have to discipline yourself, but the will has gotten stronger. You've touched the curtain. You've created a new neural pathway. You've created an image for not only what you want, the pain that you want to move away from, but what you want, but you've also gotten kind of clear on what that looks, feels like, and you're starting to believe that, holy mackerel, that's who I am.
Yeah.
I had a client some years ago that really, and we only identified it after about a year of training together. Because he kept going back, the old, like he'd lose weight and go back, yo-yo, right?
Yeah.
And we identified that he had this really disempowering belief that goes back to his childhood, that number one, he's not an athlete, period. I'm not an athlete. Not only that, but he hated athletes.
Oh, okay.
He was bullied by athletes. He was humiliated by athletes. And his parents, on the other side of the coin, encouraged him to be intellectual, to be academic. This was the most important thing in life. Read, study, learn, and by all means, very important. But we can't neglect, and as we know, people who have neglected their physiology suffer. Mm-hmm. So if they encourage neglecting the physiology, and on the other side, he was being picked on by the people that really emphasize physiology, the athletes, boom, he had this dynamic going on in his mind that, you know, and he's trying because he knows he's got to work out. He wants to stay more fit. He wants to look better, but he's got, be an academic, don't be an athlete. And everything we're doing represents this new dichotomy of actually being an athlete. So we had to create some different shit. We had to reframe what we were doing and change some old beliefs about being an athlete with him. And he had to create some new behaviors that were congruent with that new belief in order to make it happen. And ultimately it did. It really changed everything. Right?
That's a great case study. And to choose you as his coach, that was a big first step, right? You're like,
it really
like
was,
an athlete,
actually.
And he's using you as his success coach. So that's pretty cool.
You know, it's interesting is, and I like that you use the word coach because as fitness trainers and fitness professionals, we tend to forget that component, that we're really coaches as much as anything else.
Sure.
And again, I said this was several years ago. And as a personal trainer for years, I was using all the outer game tools and strategies for pretty good success. The exercise components, we shifted, we did new dynamics, we superset, we do hundreds, we would change up the routines every 3 months with all our clients. The nutrition thing, we had it down. But what we were neglecting was the mindset.
Yep.
We were neglecting the most important component. And I started to go back to, hey, when I was making that shift from over here, outlaw biker, to Mr. America, it's a pretty radical shift. I mean, that's a big leap.
Yeah.
You know, what was the most important thing? And it was the mindset. So I really began to study mindset. I began, because I was, at that time, I was studying some of the great coaches, Tony Robbins, Zig Ziglar, Maxwell Maltz, several others along the way.
Sure.
And what I realized was they had some tools. Tony Robbins particularly had some really great tools for creating belief shifts, aligning values and getting people in the mindset for achievement and long-term success. So I began to study everything Tony studied in terms of neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, change techniques and strategies, how the mind works and developing neural pathways and how we can interrupt those pathways. And it was only after that I really started using those in the coaching that I started to identify those kind of things, like my client who had this disempowering belief and his other belief that collided and would not allow him to really create ongoing success in this area. So we don't need to study NLP for 10 years to understand this stuff and to start to create this shift. All we need to do is be able to first recognize, it's like anything, you can't change anything unless you identify that it needs to change first. Mm-hmm. So hopefully whatever I'm sharing today will help those people on this call watching this video identify, whoa, that's what I've been doing. I've been going back. I've been living based on this old disempowering belief that is now obstacle. Obstacle, but obsolete.
Yeah.
So if it's obsolete, now how do I change it? Hopefully you've gotten some tools already for changing that over the 30 days. You decide, create action, follow through for 30 days. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, excellent. The next several questions, again, they may be a little basic, but I think for some people that's really where they want to start. And you've done an excellent job laying out sort of the big picture here and getting from this default mindset to a new one that requires taking a leap, that requires 30 days you know, to form a new habit in your life and to make it just part of who you are. So, you know, I think for some people they can feel overwhelmed. So, and especially, you know, sort of the audience here being really busy people, particularly, you know, busy people with families and they have so many things going on in their mind all the time that they really forget to focus on their self and their own well-being. So, you know, if you're talking to that person, this busy mom, you know, with three kids running around and she's trying to balance her career and all these other things too, she has this goal and maybe it's too fuzzy and she wants to lose weight. She wants to, you know, feel like she did 10 years ago and feel energetic. You know, what's that first step? So like the very first thing that she needs to do whenever she knows she sort of in an obscure way wants to lose weight, you know, what's her first step to get?
Well, you know, you hit on a couple of things. You said fuzzy and obscure, and that's the vast majority of people when they say they've set a goal, it's usually very fuzzy and obscure.
Yeah.
And anything that is ambiguous will do nothing to reprogram the part of our unconscious mind that will keep us moving towards. We can consciously, with our will, move towards what we want, create those new habits in 30 days. But it's imperative for that mom, number one, to get clear on exactly what she wants.
Okay.
It's not just about losing weight. Think about it. I want to lose weight. I want to lose 10 pounds. Well, really? Is 10 pounds enough? Is 10 pounds what you really want to lose? Why do you want to lose 10 pounds? Why is that? Why? Where do we get that number from? You know, as opposed to really getting clear on what that is. I mean, it's no different than, you know, I'm broke. I'm freaking broke. So what do you want? I don't want to be broke anymore, number one. Well, okay, let's phrase it in the positive. I want to be rich. We all want to be rich. But does that really do anything on an unconscious level to restart reprogramming this old default mode? The old default mode is that you're broke and you're always going to be broke, period. Because you're following some obsolete old blueprint. So for this housewife, getting really clear on what that is. And by the way, I think, you know, as a fitness professional yourself and talking with several over these last few weeks and months, they've probably given us all a good idea that the motivation of just losing weight, it's pretty good chance it's going to get interrupted by some chips, by some kids, by the dog, by the husband, whatever it might be.
Yep.
A time restraint. The goal of just losing weight is going to get interrupted. And you'll never create a new habit based on that goal alone. So it's really important to get clear on what you really want. For her, for example, she might have this idea in her mind that, God, my favorite jeans. I mean, this is a classic example, right?
Yep.
Everybody wants to be able to fit in their old favorite pair of Levi's or jeans, or I'd go back to the days of the Cavariccis. Thank God. But, you know, that is a more compelling goal. So because she's already got a model for that. The model for losing weight, it's a model for losing weight. People get caught in this loop of losing weight, losing weight, losing weight, losing weight, and they put weight back on again so they can get back into losing weight. They put weight back on and get back into losing weight. Okay. So instead, she already has a model in her mind, an example, an experience, a physical and emotional component of what it felt like to be in those jeans, man. How good it felt, how good she looked, you know, and maybe even the auditory component. Maybe she got complimented, wow, your tush looks great in those jeans.
Yeah.
That's what she wants to hear again. She wants to feel how good it felt to be in those, and she wants to look in the mirror and see herself in those jeans. Now we've got all three components, auditory, physical, and kinesthetic, working on her behalf towards moving towards something that's a lot more specific. I want to get in those jeans. So if I was a trainer working with her, well, what's that going to require? Let's get really clear. Is that 10 pounds? What do we need to lose? Is it a measurement more? But more importantly for her, it's getting clear on that I want to get in those jeans. For somebody else, it might be some other thing. It might be some other, you know, because the mind works with symbols much better than it works with numbers and data.
Okay.
You know, you create a symbol for what you want. Is that you looking in the mirror or out on the street or at a cafe in those jeans, you look freaking awesome, and somebody comes up and says, wow, you look great in those jeans. That's a symbol that the mind can get a hold of and start moving towards and creating something that's compelling, you might say.
Yeah, so it sounds like a key there with setting a goal is to make sure it has a real strong emotional tie. Because everything I hear you talking about there, just particularly in that specific example, is just totally an emotional thing. It's, you know, it's the why behind the goal, and that why really needs to have some emotional component to keep you moving forward. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know? So those are the two, in the book, The Seven Rules of Achievement, the two most important rules at the very beginning, number one and two, is the what and the why. Most people never get what they want, as Jim Rohn once said, because they don't know what they want. It's ambiguous, it's obscure, it's cloudy. Just another quick example, in fact, it was just a couple of weeks ago, I was on the phone with someone, and we were going to meet for coffee. And she said, well, let's meet over at Panera Bread, just off Sheridan and 120th. So I said, great, I know right where that is. I've been there, I know exactly where that is, right?
Yeah.
So I'm really clear. So I get in my car, a week later, I get in my car, I'm driving over there, and I'm getting closer, and all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, I thought I knew where it was, but now I'm like, is it in this shopping center or that shop? And I started getting a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
I wasn't exactly sure. You know, you think you know. You know, it's like you set a goal, and you haven't written it down, you haven't got clear on it, there's no emotional component to it. You know, there's no real reward to it, and it's a little fuzzy, like telling someone, yeah, you'll meet them somewhere, and as you get closer, you realize you're not really exactly sure where it is, and now you start to get a little panicky because you're going to be late, or you can't find it, whatever happens that causes confusion in the mind. If the mind's confusion, we already talked about it, a confused mind is a default mind. Okay. It goes right back to the old mode. So that's really critical. You can't be fuzzy, man. You got to know exactly what you want. Specifically, the more you distill it down into a message that your unconscious mind gets and the universe gets energetically, bam, the greater the likelihood is that you'll really achieve it. I hope that wasn't like too fuzzy in itself.
No, I don't think it was at all. I think that was great. And
okay.
You know, my biggest struggle now is I have some follow-up questions I want to ask, and you've done such a good job with your examples that they may have already been asked, but I'm going to ask them anyway, because I think I'm sure you'll still have better case studies and some more specifics for people. So I was trying to think of sort of the main mindset issues that we face and all the things I've faced personally when it comes to, you know, fitness in particular, but these are really universal throughout your life. And so we talked about goal setting there, sort of that first big step, and it's the what and why. It's your first two rules of achievement. And then I think the other thing that we can all relate to is you're all fired up at the beginning, and maybe you're thinking of those skinny jeans, and you're for 2 weeks, there you go, you know, you're doing great. And I know we've talked about the 30-day habit, and maybe that's part of the answer. But so many of us get fired up at the beginning when we've got these goals, and it's particularly these emotional goals, and then we, at some point along the way, we lose our motivation, we fall off course, and that sort of goal becomes a distant memory. People are sort of listening to this in the beginning of a new year, they're probably thinking back to last year and all these resolutions that they might have made and these goals they had for the year. And they might not even remember what they were, but at the time, they were like the biggest thing in their life. So, you know, what's your top advice, I guess, when it comes to staying motivated over the long haul and really creating, you know, if we're getting away from this default mode into what we really want. You know, what's some top tips, I guess, for staying motivated over the long term?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, creating what also one of the rules is that you've got to have a way of measuring progress.
Okay.
A lot of people they neglect this component. They, you know, they may take the first couple of steps and get clear on what they want, why they want it, and the third step is to know where you are in the process so you can really kind of measure progress. Measuring progress is critical. You got to be able to, you know, because there are going to be times when, you know, you're going to get challenged. You're going to want to be pulled off course, and you're going to want to go back to the old default mode. So if you're not measuring progress, if you're not seeing the incremental stages that you're moving towards that ultimate goal, looking good in those jeans or creating abundant wealth in your life, and that abundant wealth, by the way, also needs to be clearly defined. And the measuring the progress is based on where you are currently. If I'm trying to create some abundance in my life financially, I need to know exactly what my financial picture looks like right now. Most people aren't really, really clear on that. So most people aren't really clear or don't want to admit. Have you ever had a client that doesn't want to weigh in? You know what? Let's just get started. I don't even want to weigh in. I don't want to see what I don't.
Yeah.
I'm devastated. Doesn't want to do measurements.
Yeah, or doesn't want to say a before photo because they don't want to see it.
That's a perfect example. No, the before photos are painful for most people, and a lot of people resist that. But if you don't do that, then it becomes really difficult to quantify progress. If we're not quantifying progress, we may not be seeing it. The other thing that winds up discouraging people and taking away their motivation is that they may be like, and this happens with personal training, fitness professionals all the time. If all I'm doing is one learning modality with this person, in other words, okay, we're going to lose a certain amount of weight and we're going to weigh in every week. And if we don't see progress on the scale, or even if we do see progress on the scale, it may not be enough for that individual. You know, what does that really mean to me? Hey, we lost 2 pounds. Great. We're moving towards our goal. Terrific. But, you know, what I want is a feeling. I want something that really feels, you know, so maybe it's, hey, if I'm trying to get down from a 40 waistline jeans to a 32, so you know what? Hey, within 3 weeks, maybe I go out and I treat myself to a pair of 38s,
yep.
A pair of 36s. Just kind of a way of measuring your progress along the way so that you maintain that motivation. So you can see, number one, that you're really moving towards what you want. That's a really critical component in staying motivated. The other thing, too, is to be aware. Again, we talked about it's hard to change anything if you're not aware that it needs to be changed or that it's disrupting your life or disempowering in any way. Mm-hmm. The first thing is to be aware it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Along the way, you're going to wind up feeling a little discouraged. You're going to wind up feeling a little busy. You're going to wind up feeling like, oh my God, is it even worth it? You know, so you're going to lose a little bit of mojo. The key is to be aware of it. And I define it because, again, the mind functions best based on symbols versus any, you know, anything else, you know, numbers even. It's got a symbol. So this thing that wants to pull you back, wants you to get discouraged, and wants you to go back to the old default mode, go back to who you were at one time and what you've decided to change, I call it the dragon. And a dragon, you know, shows up, you know, just as things are starting to change, just as the, you know, the village is starting to grow the crops. Things are starting to change, and it's like, wow, we created abundance. It's springtime. Let's get out and play. Let's move it. All of a sudden, whoa, the freaking dragon comes in. It says, I don't think so. Those crops are mine. So, and that's going to show up 30 days into it, 20 days into it, 60 days into it. Incrementally, the dragon will show up and want to pull you right back or send you back into the hut or send you back into the cave. So you're protected in your comfort zone. It doesn't want you to change. It's part of the ego that's deathly afraid of change. So if we're aware of it, number one, and you say, okay, as soon as you become acutely aware that, holy mackerel, I didn't get to the gym yesterday, and I'm already asking myself the question, well, maybe I can't get there today either. I got this project I'm working on.
Yeah.
You got to sit back and become aware that suddenly, hey, wait a second. I didn't get to the gym yesterday. I didn't eat so good yesterday either. And I'm also questioning whether I'm going to do that today. This is it. This is the very beginning of the dragon swooping down and wanting you to go right back into your comfort zone, back into the cave or back into the hut to protect yourself from getting burned, right?
Yeah.
So you got to be aware of that. So the first thing is in terms of keep maintaining motivation, and there are several motivation tools, by the way. Getting clear on what you want is critical, number one. Having a compelling why and writing these things down are really critical. You talked about looking back or thinking about old you know, resolutions from last year. Most people don't even remember what they were.
Yeah.
If you don't remember what your resolutions were from last year, then you were set up for failure to begin with.
Sure.
It should be written down. It should be a compelling mission statement along with that, and also identifying why. Why is this important? If I don't lose 50 pounds, what example am I setting for my children?
Yeah.
They're already challenged enough today with junk food and crap and watching TV and video games and being sedentary. I'm setting up another model for that. What kind of success are they going to be later in life as a result of that? That's a compelling why. The truth is we'll do more for others than we will for ourselves.
Yeah.
If your goal is set up around not only doing something for yourself, which is really important, but as parents, we know that, you know, we'll sacrifice our lives for our kids, man.
Yep.
So you know what? Instead of sacrificing your life, change your life. So identifying what, why, attaching it to someone else and serving someone else, getting clear on how you're going to measure your progress along the way, what do you have to see in the mirror, what do you have to hear, maybe what do you have to see on the scale, critical, and knowing that that dragon at some point or many points is going to swoop in and try and stop you. And when you all of a sudden you become aware of it, and if you set your mind to be aware of it, if you know it's coming, I'm going to wait for it. It's coming. And when it does, I'm going to identify it quickly, and I'm going to say, nope, I'm taking action. Boom, you stop right then, right there, no matter what you're in the middle. Because, again, this is the old neural pathway trying to reset itself. So as soon as you become aware that, wow, here comes the dragon. Holy crap, I can't believe it. There it is. Tom said it was going to happen, and sure enough, boom, you slap the table, you stop what you're doing, you get your shoes on, you go for a walk. I don't care what it is. Even if you just have time to stand up, to interrupt the pattern that says stop. You don't need to go to the gym. You don't need to eat better. Stop immediately. Interrupt the pattern. Stand up. Take a deep breath. Connect with your body. Do 3 squats, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Run in place for 5 seconds. Anything to interrupt that old pattern from reigniting again. Those are critical components. Those 4 things. What do you want? Why do you want it? Identifying where you are in the process and knowing the dragon is going to show up. Really critical in maintaining the motivation. Most people don't do that. They just don't.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I think if you do that too and you're aware of the dragon and you take that proactive step to do something to block it off, then again, you're kind of earlier in our conversation, we talked about strengthening your will. That's going to strengthen your will. That's going to give you a lot more self-confidence because it's like, you know, everything went wrong today. I should have, you know, I had every excuse in the world to skip the gym. I only went for 15 minutes, but I went, you know. Damn it, this is the new me. This is who I am.
Oh, man. You know, with all that blabbering I did, you just said it more succinctly than I ever could. That's it right there. You know, it's like, damn it, I went.
Yep.
And you know how much pride you take in that? And that's the emotional component. When you're proud of what you're doing and you feel like, you know what, in the past, I would have let that take me out. But now I'm aware of it. Now I know it's a dragon. I know it's just trying to take me back. And I took some action today. Like you said, I went to the gym. It was only 15 minutes. But I went. Boom. You feel really good about that. So you can imagine how you're going to feel the next day. You're going to feel like, I did something. I overcame that. I strengthened my will. The way we lose motivation is by allowing the dragon to defeat us again and again and again. We become deflated. We lose, period. You lose today, you're much weaker tomorrow. And it knows it. Remember, when your strength of will gets stronger, it gets weaker. But if you allow it to get stronger, yours gets weaker. It's a dynamic relationship between the two.
Yep.
And it's critical that yours continues to get stronger while it gets weaker, not reverse.
Okay.
So you said it really well. Thank you.
Well thanks. You're a good teacher because I made it boil down that quickly to me in my mind as an example. So there's a lot of value, obviously, in all 7 of the rules of achievement. I know we've talked about several. And you know, in different capacities, I guess. But just so we don't miss them, I mean, could you kind of just walk us through quickly the 7 rules? You can, the ones that we've already alluded to, you can sort of say, you know, remember this is what we talked about. And just sort of wrap up here with what are the 7 rules of achievement that people need to keep in mind. And obviously they'll pick up your book, hopefully, and get the in-depth and get all the case studies and stories that go along with it. But would that be okay? Could you write down the 7?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the 7 here, I have it in the book.
It's
a circular component, and it begins first with the dream of desire. You know, and that's not one of the rules, but that's where it begins. It begins with something that you really want, that you've decided, you've made a decision, period. And then it moves into the what, getting clear on what that looks like. We got to really define that, hone it down, distill it down. I mentioned Jim Rohn. Most people never get what they want because they don't know what they want specifically.
Yeah.
If it's cloudy, if it's fuzzy, forget it. It's not going to happen. The next is the why. Why is it compelling? Why do you really want this? You know, most people fail in achieving any sort of goal or idea of what they want as a result of not having a compelling why. If the why you want to be rich or lose weight is based on something society expects from you, or your mother expects from you, or even your husband expects from you, it's nice not to let people down and to help meet their expectations. We're not here to meet other people's expectations.
Yep.
We're here to set high achievement goals for ourselves and meet our own expectations in that respect. So you've got to have a compelling why that's not based on what somebody else expects of you, even society for that matter. The third reason, of course, is the where. Where are you in the process? It's critical because you know what you want, but it's way over here. And you're somewhere over here, but you're not sure where. I mean, imagine a map of the United States in front of you, and you've got this great destination. You know, hey, we're going to go to Vegas for the weekend, man. I can't wait. It's going to be a blast. You know, we're going to stay at this great hotel. We're going to have some fun. What stays in Vegas? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah.
But you don't know where you are. Do you know if you got to go south, east, north, or west? I don't know where I am. I know I want to get to Vegas. I know where it is, but I have no idea where I'm starting from. Very difficult. And again, it creates confusion in the mind. If the mind is confused, It's a default mind. Okay. So you got to remember that. Yep. And the next thing is, of course, resources. What resources do you have? What resources will you need? Another way a lot of people wind up discouraged, and I believe it's self-sabotaging in many respects, but wind up discouraged, frustrated, and not achieving their goals, is because they didn't take enough time in advance to identify what resources they're going to need. We've all heard this in the past. You know, oh, yeah, so how's it going, man? You went back to school, right? You were going to study for your master's degree, and I think you got started. Oh, yeah, I made it through one semester, and, man, it just got too expensive. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Really? You couldn't have identified that in advance and then decided, what am I going to need? How am I going to be able to finance this thing in advance? Sometimes it's good to just start and go and find solutions along the way.
Yeah.
But for really getting it, these rules are about the science of achievement.
Okay.
Not lucking into it or just taking that leap of faith without a plan, without a strategy, without a science behind it. The science of achievement is based on these seven rules, or the seven rules are based on the science of achievement. And identifying your resources. What do you need? Well, you know, if you know you go to the gym on a regular basis and you wind up going for 2 months and then you stop for 2 months, or you miss every other workout, or when you're there, you tend to slack off. Well, a good resource might be to have a personal trainer, have someone that coaches you, a mentor, or even an accountability partner on a regular basis.
Right.
That's going to be a critical component for you. So if you don't do that, if you don't have that in advance or find a way to make that happen in advance, you might be setting yourself up for failure based on your old pattern, right?
Yep.
You got to know what resources you have, what resources you want. The next step is, of course, evidence. And we talked about this earlier. You got to have evidence of progress, man. You got to know where you're going. And by the way, this is something interesting that I talk about in the book. I did a lot of research in this area because if you take an overview of the goal, you're here, here's your goal, you're moving towards it, and you've got a pretty good idea of what it looks like. So you're moving in the right direction. But down in the trenches, the terrain is a little different than the overview, than the full map, right?
Yeah.
We know that the terrain is filled with obstacles. From over here, you can't see the landmines. You only know they're there when you're down in the trenches, when you're in the terrain. The terrain is always different than the map. So it's a really good idea along the way to learn from someone who's been through the terrain. If I'm walking through a minefield, I want to be behind someone who's been through that minefield before.
Sure.
Who can recognize and identify, okay, take a step over to the left. Take a step over to the right. Ah, you want to jump over this one. Because the terrain is going to be something that's going to stop us along the way unless we identify those things. So it's a great idea to have a mentor, to have a coach, to have someone who's been there before and done that. That's what evidence, and also evidence that you've gotten there. My wife and I went camping in Leadville, Colorado. I live out here in Colorado.
Okay.
We went camping up in Twin Lakes, Leadville, a few years ago. And we knew exactly where we wanted to go. On the map, we knew, right? It was this really cool campground, kind of remote. It wasn't like this big Winnebago's in there. It was off this dirt trail we had to take with the Jeep. And we knew where we wanted to go. And then we get back there. We follow the map. And we're getting back. We're like, it should be here. Isn't this right? And we're like, looking at the map, like, it's here. It's here somewhere. But it's all rocks and hills and trees and stuff. And there was no evidence, no signs, no nothing that we were there. And it was really frustrating because we drove around for about another half hour trying to figure it out. We wound up camping there anyway. I don't even know if it was the campground or not, but it's completely done. But we were a little frustrated because we couldn't find it.
Yeah.
And that's simply because we didn't really know. What are the landmarks? What are we really looking for? All we had was a map. So know what you're looking for in terms of evidence that you achieved it. By the way, this may be for you because I know that you put a lot of work into this project.
Mm-hmm.
And for many people that put that kind of work into a project like this, it's easy to become a workaholic. It's easy to set a goal to achieve something and not even identify that we've achieved it, not celebrate that we've achieved it, simply because we're still striving. We have the nose to the grindstone. And then we got the nose of the grindstone. We don't even know that we achieved what we set out to achieve.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that in a lot of areas.
Right? We do that.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. That's another reason why you really need to get clear on evidence, not only that you're making progress, but evidence that you're freaking there. We did it.
Yeah.
We achieved it. Now celebrate, man. Embody that celebration. The next one is the IR. I call it the internal representation. And the internal representation is a critical component because, again, it's the internal model. That's why I went back to this gal who wants to lose weight, but clearly it's more about getting into those genes. She's got a model for that. What does that look like, right?
Yep.
So she's already got evidence mentally. She's got a picture of what that looks like, sounds like, feels like. And And as a result, it's much more compelling, and she's moving towards it on a regular basis to make that happen. If we don't have a good mental picture of what it sounds like, what it feels like, what it looks like, it's a little tough to achieve. You got to have that mental picture. So the internal representation is critical. The last component is action, taking action.
Okay.
You can have all the other stuff in place, but if you're not taking action, sometimes massive action, if you don't take that first leap of faith, that first giant step or small step, what's going to happen? You know, we talk about the law of attraction in personal development is the whole, the secret.
Sure.
And the secret is that, number one, it wasn't really a big secret to begin with. But number two, we want to resonate in a certain energy by focusing on something. But, you know, I mean, the classic example has become, hey, I've focused on a lot of money. I've focused on being rich, but I've never had a freaking armored truck and pull up in front of my house and just drop off a bunch of money.
Yeah.
It's never happened. If you don't take action, I don't care how much you visualize, how many of the rules you got in place, you've got to take action. And that's the seventh rule. So it's really important that you have all seven of those to really tap into the science of achievement as opposed to maybe getting lucky here and there. And that does happen. Luck isn't one of the seven rules, but I'll tell you what, man, it may be the overarching component of the whole thing. There's a little luck involved.
Yeah, and I've heard a quote, and I'm not sure where it originated. I've heard it a lot in these circles, but, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you become. And I think that just gets wrapped into that. I love what you've laid out there with the science behind achievement. And I think what most people would find is as they do those things and they're being proactive and they're taking those actions, that the luck kind of finds you. You know, it's not so much luck. It's you set yourself up for success. And, you know, and I found that in different areas of my own life and seeing that with a lot of friends and colleagues where, yeah, if you didn't know them on the surface, it would look like they're just lucky. But when you dig down, you see that they've been taking a lot of action that you didn't know about, and they've set themselves up for those successes. So,
yeah, oh boy, you hit it on the nose. I mean, it's, you know, we all see, you know, somebody suddenly thrust into the spotlight. Now, today is a little different in some respects. So there is exceptions to this rule. You know, with all these reality shows, The Situation, for example.
Yeah, he's lucky.
I'm not sure. Although even that, I got to say, you know, I mean, as much as, you know, the Situation guy is kind of like character, we're all like, oh, are you kidding me? But let's face it, if he didn't work the abs, he's not in great shape, but if he didn't work the abs a little, if he didn't do something, he wouldn't have been prepared for, and I got to give him some credit, because when you're thrust into the limelight like that and you look like the overnight success, you got to have some semblance of stability in your life emotionally to be able to handle it. A lot of people couldn't even handle it for a couple of months being thrust into that limelight.
Yeah.
So I give them that. But I think in most cases, the overnight success is nowhere near overnight, right?
Yep.
It's about preparation. It's about being the right person at the right time in the right spot. And in the book, and what I teach also, is that by applying those rules, particularly the what and the why, we program what's called the reticular activator in our mind.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because that's a pretty fascinating concept.
It's an interesting component because it's a real part. It's a physical component of the brain that's located just below the brain stem and the basal ganglia in the back of the head. And it becomes like the a border patrol guard that only allows into our consciousness certain information that's either significant or problematic or familiar, let's just say.
Okay.
Because think about how much information, even just as we're looking at the screen. If we had to process consciously all the billions of bits of information that's coming at us every day, it'd be impossible. We'd go mad.
Yep.
So that Border Patrol guard has to allow into our consciousness the things that are significant, important, or problematic. Problematic might be if you're walking on a path in Colorado in a hiking trail, you may not consciously see that rattlesnake that's on the path, but unconsciously your reticular activator knows, hey, that's dangerous, and it makes you alert about it. It totally alerts you of that situation. And in life and finances and relationships, there are problematic things that we want to be alerted of. So it lets it into our consciousness. Sometimes we overreact to those things. But the thing that's important to us in this particular component is what's significant. So what makes something significant to you, what makes it important to you, is that you've identified it as such. And it's got a compelling component to it, like an emotion, that makes it significant. When I first rescued our Schnauzer, you know, it was like, I didn't, the Schnauzer breed? I haven't paid attention to the Schnauzer breed.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I started seeing schnauzers everywhere. I mean, it was like there was an explosion in the schnauzer population in my neighborhood.
Yep.
And that's not really what happened. What happened was all of a sudden they became significant to me, and I started seeing them everywhere.
Yep.
So when you identify what you want and you program unconsciously that reticular activator, all of a sudden the resources, mm-hmm. the opportunities that would have just dissipated, I never seen it. I never get any opportunities. Well, really? You haven't programmed yourself to identify the opportunities, to identify the resources you need to achieve your goal. Once you program it, you become like Donald Trump. That freaking guy doesn't miss an opportunity no matter what.
Yeah.
You know? He knows exactly what he wants, and he has an idea he's going to get there, but he identifies resources along the way that make it possible to do what he does. Do those resources show up more in abundance? Absolutely. But when you program yourself and you train yourself, when you're a master of achievement, that's what happens. You start to identify things that would otherwise dissipate, disappear. You never really even noticed they were there.
Yeah.
So it's really important to program that by, number one, what do you want? That's critical.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you use the schnauzer example, and it's probably one of your talks I've seen before or an interview with you. I think that anyone can relate to is you may not notice there's a yellow Honda Civic in the whole town, but if you bought one, or if you're thinking about, do I want to buy a Honda Civic or a Toyota Camry?
Right.
You'll see every single one. You know, it's like it seems like they're everywhere then.
Absolutely.
Been there, but you just never noticed them because you didn't set up your reticular activator system. I guess wasn't set up to pick up that and put it in your conscious mind.
Exactly right. I mean, you wouldn't notice. Why would you notice a yellow or a Honda Civic? Otherwise, until all of a sudden it became important to you. By the way, I'm looking forward to noticing all the red Lamborghinis out there. I do. I already noticed them, by the way, but it's not
yeah.
just because it's cool, you know. But I am looking forward to taking it to a whole new level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. will those handle well in the roads of Colorado?
Best place for them. Yeah. Now, a friend of mine, Bill Phillips. Bill has several exotic cars,
yeah.
and I don't think he has any exotic cars here. He has a place in Los Angeles, in Hollywood.
Okay.
Fabulous home, and he has several exotic cars. But that's a really great place for it. You know, out here, I don't know. I mean, I've seen a few. I'm looking forward to testing one. Some of those Colorado roads, man. We'll let you know, all right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think we're about ready to wrap up. And my final question here, it may be a challenge. We've got a running question through all the interviews, and they may be hit on a little different aspect. But the basic thing is the one top piece of advice, the one takeaway that people can take action on right away for busy couples, in this case, you know, if they want to improve their relationship and their well-being and their fitness. So I know it's hard because we've talked about so much, we've given so much great information.
Right.
But if you could pick one top piece of advice that you'd want people sort of as a parting thought to leave with, what do you think that would be?
Mm. Well, number one is that we can't expect our partners, as I talked about earlier, to meet our expectations. The greatest pain that we experience in life is unmet expectations. And if we've suddenly gotten involved in fitness and we're enjoying it and we feel compelled and we want our partner to be part of that and we encourage them, we push them, but they just aren't embracing it, it may be that they're putting up resistance for several reasons. It may be even because we're pushing them into it. We expect them to be part of it. The best thing you can do is love your partner unconditionally and inspire them through your own actions. Inspire them. Yeah, we might be a little disappointed because we'd love to do that hike with our wife or our husband. We'd love to do skiing or mountain biking or get in the gym together. You know, we all have this grandiose idea that we'll train with our partners in the gym. We'll look like that couple that, wow, they're always together. It's great.
Sure.
It's terrific. If you can do that, fantastic. My wife and I used to train together. And I got to tell you, I've had, as a former, you know, national bodybuilding champion and a competitor on the Mr. Olympia stage, I've trained with some of the top guys in the world of my era, my generation. And my wife, son of a gun, was the toughest training partner I've ever had in my life. I stopped training with her. I couldn't train with her anymore. Because I'd be like, oh, man, I push her to the limit. I'm like, oh, I'm done. She's like, you had three more. I mean, she was always pushing me, man. And in actuality, it was starting to hurt the relationship. So we stopped training together.
Yeah.
We had this idea that we could do this, but it really wasn't what we thought it might be. So it didn't work out. So the critical thing here is, don't expect your spouse necessarily to be in love with everything that you're in love with doing.
Yep.
And the only way to really motivate someone or inspire someone to take action in what you love to do is by really being what you want. What the change you want to see in others, you have to be that change. And if you're both out of shape or out of condition or could take your fitness level to another, whole nother level, then you owe it to yourself to embrace that yourself personally and inspire your spouse to be part of it as a result of seeing what you're experiencing and the changes that that's taking place in your life. And hopefully you'll get on the same path together.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just be happy together and do what you do, man.
That's awesome advice. And that's something we haven't touched on enough in some of these interviews. My background has a lot to do with helping people with their marriages and the relationship side of things, and of course melded with fitness at this point. But that's just perfect. Mm. And again, that, like all these things that we talk about, it's so, I guess, wide ranging. It applies to all areas of our life. But that, you know, leading by example and doing it yourself, and that's how you'll get your spouse fired up and get them on board, because they'll see the results, they'll see what it means to you. And if they have an interest in it, and they just may not, but if they do, that's how you'll get them to come along. And if you start throwing it down their throat, it just becomes resentful. And
absolutely,
things will never go the right way when you take that approach. So,
plus, you know, we create desire. We can help motivate desire in others by actually, you know, I mean, instead, do the opposite. I mean, it's simple reverse psychology. I mean, really, for example, I mean, I'm not sure everyone on this call will want this book.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure this book is for everyone. Not everyone is ready to make the commitment to really start moving forward and creating the changes in their lives. So if you're not ready, then you know what? This book isn't for you. The 7 Rules isn't for you. Keep doing what you're doing. Enjoy it. And, you know, if mediocrity is what you enjoy in your life, then that's fine.
Yeah.
For those of you who really want to make some changes, this is the way you want to go.
Yeah, and I'd highly recommend it. That was to close out here, I was going to say,
don't
interrupt
you, but the reason I did that, I didn't want that to be a blatant sale. The reason I did that is because that's, you know, when we pushed me, if I said, you know what, you need this freaking book. Buy this book. You need to get on board with this thing. You need to make some happen in your life. If we approach our spouse with that same thing, you know what, I'm going to the gym today. You need to go. You're getting fat. You're not looking good. You know what? I mean, it doesn't work. They'll put up resistance.
Yeah.
If we just say, I'm doing this, and you're welcome to join me, but you know what? It may not be for you right now. That's okay, you know? It creates a desire. It's like, hey, I want to be around that. I want to be part of that. Instead of pushing them, and as a result, creating resistance. That's the only reason I did that, and because it's a subtle unconscious suggestion.
Well, and I will subtly unconsciously suggest also that people join me in studying that book, because and what we've talked about today, I'm personally fired up, and I've talked to, you know, 12 experts now, I guess, and a lot of other experts, but for this particular series, and I listen to a lot of things that have to do with success and achievement in different areas of life, and I think you've got it, man. I think you got it figured out. And I'm really excited about those 7 steps. I'm really excited to share this interview with everybody. And I know particularly those busy people out there who can feel overwhelmed and who have went through these gyrations and the yo-yos in their fitness and their other parts of their life. I'm hoping this is a moment that they, like, man, then, you know, they get it. And that, you know, they're willing to go out there and take that next step to go buy a book. You know, how basic is that? And spend a few days reading that, and let that be the catalyst for figuring out what it is they actually want and then going and getting it.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. And the last thing I might say to everyone is that, you know, if you're hearing in your own little mind right now, not little mind, but a little voice in your mind, you know, because now you've gotten some tools, you've gotten some action steps, you've gotten an opportunity to make some changes, but what will happen is that old default mode will come in and say, remind you of the times you tried in the past and maybe weren't as successful as you could have been. You got to say, thank you for sharing. You're creating a new neural pathway. The past does not equal the future, period. So forget that. Just thank you for sharing and move on with some new congruent action towards what you want, because you're going to hear that old little voice that's going to come up. Yep. It may be coming up right now.
Yep. Well, Tom, where's the best place for people to find out more about you, some of the different coaching services or speaking opportunities, as well as find the 7 Rules of Achievement? Kind of where would you direct people? Online.
There's a couple of websites. You can go to tomterwilliger.com. That's TerwilliGer.com.
Okay.
Or for the book and some of the things we're doing around the book and the coaching, 7rulesofachievement.com.
And that's the numerical 7?
The number 7, numerical 7. Yes.
Okay.
I just forget to add that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's Well, hey, I don't know what else to say other than thank you. This has been fantastic. I don't know how anyone could listen to this and not be inspired and not be ready to go make some of these changes that they've maybe struggled with over the years. So with that, Tom, I'll let you go here, and we will hopefully hook up in the future. And thank you so much for being part of this interview series.
My pleasure, Dustin, and thank you. And keep doing the great work you're doing. You're serving a lot of people, including your family, but you're making life a little bit more congruent in terms of balance, and I want to thank you for that. I've gotten a lot out of this myself, so thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Tom Terwilliger. If you're anything like me, you're probably pretty fired up right now and ready to set your goals and to go achieve them. I think a great aid to do that would be Tom's book. It's pictured here, 7 Rules of Achievement. We'll go ahead and link to it below the interview so that you'll have easy access to that. You can check out Tom both at 7rulesofachievement.com for the book and also tomterwilliger.com for his blog, which is also a great resource. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great day.